driven by Briggs Auto Lane.
Let's have some fun. Let's go.
And BriggsAuto.com. Get in the game.
Welcome back to the game. Tyler Dreiling and Mitch Fordner with you until 6 o'clock. John Kurtz down with the Manhattan High basketball team, which did defeat Hutchinson in their first game of that midseason tournament today. Congratulations to the Tribe on that. In this hour, we'll have plenty of discussion on K-State's victory over Oklahoma State last night. The Wildcats finally have a win on the road in Big 12 play. 96-88, the final from Gallagher-Iba Arena. Yet another reason KU wins the Big 12 every single year. If you were paying attention to what happened in Morgantown, West Virginia last night, you know what I'm talking about. An NFL team on the move. The Oakland Raiders have filed their paperwork to move to Las Vegas, which I think is a huge upgrade as a Chiefs fan. If I ever have any interest in going on the road to a Chiefs and Raiders game, yeah, I'm going to be a little bit more excited about Las Vegas than Oakland. We'll finish off the show with You Can't Be Serious. And stay tuned. Later this hour, you'll have a chance to get entered in to win those Royals Fan Fest passes that we've been getting people registered for this week. We will draw a winner tomorrow. We already have two people signed up to be in contention. Add your name to that list later on in this hour. We also heard earlier this afternoon a couple of confirmed Royals players that are going to be at FanFest. Mike Moustakas and Eric Hosmer are both going to be there. You'll have a chance to meet them as part of this package, so stay tuned for your chance to win that. K-State wins in Oklahoma State, or wins at Oklahoma State 96-88 last night. Career-high 22 points for Barry Brown, who was 9 of 17 from the field, 4 of 7 from three-point range. You also saw very good games from DJ Johnson, who had 18.6 boards. Wesley Awundu, 15 points, 8 boards, and 8 assists. So he actually was kind of flirting with a triple-double there. Comes up just a couple rebounds and a couple assists shy of that. Pretty good game for Kamau Stokes. 12 points, 7 assists, 4 rebounds. He did go down with an ankle injury late in that game. The update from Bruce Weber is that it is an ankle sprain, and he is questionable for K-State's next game, which is on Saturday when they host the 7th-ranked West Virginia Mountaineers. K-State will definitely need him back for that, so we'll have to continue to monitor that. But K-State did a lot of good things in this game. Oklahoma State was just so red-hot in that first half, shooting 50% from the floor, and that included 64% on their three-pointers, 9 of 14. And three of those, and Mitch, I know that you were at Bramlage, so you didn't have a chance to see him, but three of the 9 three-pointers they made in that first half came on just the most fortunate shooter's rolls that you could possibly imagine. I mean, just those ones that clank off the rim, then hit the backboard, then hit the rim again and find a way in. I mean, it seemed like K-State was having a lot of supernatural forces going against them with how things were going early in that game. But that's what makes it more impressive, that they were able to buckle down and start to play their style of basketball down the stretch and really through the course of the entire second half. They got it into the paint. They scored 48 points in the paint in this game, shot 56%, including 60% in the second half. And they also started to hit some threes later on in the contest as well. They were good at the free throw line, which has been a struggle for K-State at times this year, especially on the road. They were 17 of 21. And they didn't get badly out-rebounded. Oklahoma State is a pretty good rebounding team despite their lack of size. K-State has been the worst rebounding team in the Big 12 so far this year, but it was 34 to 32 in that department. K-State was working really, really hard with everything going on in the paint. And as far as how it impacts K-State's season going forward, I said in the first hour that a win like this certainly is not going to be one that you're going to hang at the top of your resume at the end of the year. Is Oklahoma State going to be a top 100 RPI team at the end of the year? I don't know. I certainly see that they have the capability of winning some Big 12 games. They are 0-6 now, but they have been competitive in a lot of those games. And, I mean, if you have players the quality of a Jawan Evans, a Phil Forte, Leighton Hammonds, and Jeffrey Carroll. I think you could probably put Mitchell Solomon in there too. They're kind of like K-State. They don't have very much depth, but their starting five really is pretty solid. So I don't know how much weight it's going to carry, but the significance of it is that it breaks the seal on K-State and the struggles they've had on the road, not just this season, not just last season, but we're going on 3 years now that that the Wildcats have been very poor on the road in Big 12 games. Can this, figuring it out and actually getting it done, can that turn into a road win in Austin or in Norman or in Ames or in Fort Worth? There are more opportunities down the stretch for K-State to add to this, and that's where the significance of this game comes in. It's not just winning this one. It's what does that do for you from a mental standpoint going forward when you can earn some wins against teams that absolutely will be in the top 100 at the end of the year. TCU will be. Oklahoma, we're actually going to talk more about this coming up in the next segment, but after OU's win against West Virginia last night, they are 102 in RPI and certainly trending upward now that they are healthy once again. So that could be a big win or an opportunity for you going forward. I think that's the significance of this game, not necessarily winning, but figuring out how to win a game like this in a pretty hostile environment. That was the biggest takeaway I had from the game.
My biggest takeaway of the game is how the referee could have called a backcourt violation on K-State towards the end of that game. I've been looking through the rule book because I've been given every year a rule book by the Big 12. And
Is it in crayon?
It is in a silly font.
Okay. Well, close enough.
So I'm saying not in Times New Roman or whatever. But I've been looking to see if that was a violation of the rule. Well, there really isn't a rule that states if a player is in the air jumping from the backcourt to the front court and catches the ball in the front court, there is not anything in there that says that is a violation.
It was strange.
I think that's one. I've seen some ridiculous calls, but when it comes to the actual, I've gone one time this year to the rule book to figure out if that was a violation of a foul or not, and that was just so silly.
It was strange. I mean, I paused the TV where the ball was caught on that pass, and it was a good like 4 feet past past midcourt, something like that. I mean, it was not even close. So I was really confused about
that. I
let
that bother me too much because it made me get on Twitter and just start rambling.
Well, and I mentioned that social media had very little faith that K-State was going to win that ball game up until the final buzzer because K-State has been in that position so many times, including down in Lubbock when they had a 7-point lead in the second half of that game.
It got a little scary.
It was, yeah, I felt a little bit nervous when OSU was able to have that three and then the turnover. I think that three made it a 6-point game. Then K-State immediately had that turnover on the inbounds. That could have gotten a little bit hairy, but the fact of the matter was what you had a lot of confidence in was that if K-State really needed a basket, they had a way to get it because of their size advantage inside and DJ Johnson, Wesley Iwundu. I mean, whoever K-State wanted to get to the basket, they were getting to the basket. That's not the case against every team in the Big 12.
Well, and I did feel K-State was catching a lot of breaks as well. Oakland was throwing some balls away towards the end. Plus, the Cowboys, they had a lot of open shots, and they weren't hitting them. And that was the separation, in my opinion, from Oklahoma State has been close in some of these league games, and it comes down to who can hit the shots at the end. That's probably where what's separating Oklahoma State from being higher up in the Big 12 standings is, you know, making the buckets at the end of ball games.
Yeah, I noticed, actually, I'm glad you bring that up because I saw a headline from someone who covers Oklahoma State. They were just posting their game story, and the headline was very ironic because the headline was OSU falters again late in game. That's exactly the same problem that K-State has had. Oklahoma State is a team that has almost been worse in that department than K-State over the course of this year, and it's starting to show with these losses and them adding up. I think they will get it figured out, and the fact that Bruce Weber had a very good night coaching last night and happened to be coaching against Brad Underwood, I don't think that that's really that big of a deal. OSU is going to be in great shape with him moving forward, I believe. But it was interesting that some of the things that are affecting Oklahoma State right now and ultimately will keep them out of the NCAA tournament are problems that K-State has been battling for the last two or three seasons with Bruce Weber.
I just don't understand, and I'm talking about Oklahoma State here, how a team can average 88 points a game and have a record of 10-8. That is silly to me because they are second in the Big 12 right now in points per game. A point ahead of them is West Virginia, who is 15-3, and 2.5 points below them is KU.
Yeah, it's weird, but I would say that if you watched all 40 minutes of last night's game, you would start to understand why a little bit. Because
well, I was keeping up with the stats, and they seemed like – well, both teams didn't seem like they were missing a whole lot in the first half, but the difference was Oklahoma State was hitting the threes.
Yeah, and when I say that K-State got everything they wanted in the paint, a lot of times when you hear that, you're going to look at what K-State's post players did. You know, and DJ Johnson had a great game, 18 points, 6 boards. Dean Wade was actually kind of quiet, 7 points and 5 boards. But what I also mean by that is not what their forwards did, but what K-State's guards were able to do when they just drove to the basket. I mean, Barry Brown did make 4 threes in this game, but he made 9 baskets total, and at least 3 of those were on cuts to the basket where he pretty much had a wide-open layup. I mean, he put a move on his defender out at the 3-point line or at the top of the key and pretty much had an open lane. It was very similar to like a rec league ball game is really what it looked like because the defense was not great. K-State did play solid defense in the second half, but in terms of Oklahoma State, there just really wasn't anything there throughout, and that's why they've been losing games despite averaging 88 points.
And by the way, I do want to give my credit to Bruce Weber on this win because he had you could tell he had his team, you know, KU mentally focused like he had in the had his team in the KU game, and just except this time around they closed out a ball game by making buckets and playing some pretty good defense.
It moved K-State up to number 46, I believe, in RPI for the season. So you can take that for what it's worth. K-State currently sits in fifth in the Big 12 in that category, trailing KU, Baylor, TCU, and West Virginia in that order. West Virginia, by the way, is only 42 after that loss to Oklahoma. K-State's 48. I think K-State's going to be favored once again over a top 10 team when Saturday comes around, assuming that Kamau Stokes is able
to
play.
And by the way, Oklahoma State has the worst scoring defense in the Big 12 at 80.2 points per game. So what I really appreciate is K-State not underachieving against that defense.
Oklahoma State had 54 points at halftime. They scored 34 in the second half. That is some good coaching.
How many points did K-State have last year in Stillwater? Wasn't more than 60, and the game went to overtime, I'm pretty sure.
I believe the final from last year's game was 58-55 in overtime. Like, we almost got to that point in one half last night. It was totally the opposite. And actually, John pointed that out on Twitter at halftime of the game. I had kind of forgotten that. Pretty easy to forget that game from Stillwater last year. But nonetheless, it is K-State's first win at Gallagher Iba Arena since 2012 and only the second since 1993. That was the good news. The bad news is KU is well on its way to 13 straight regular season Big 12 titles, and that's because what happened to West Virginia last night does not happen to Kansas. We'll talk about that coming up next on the game.